everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And as always, I have a question for you. Have you ever given yourself earnestly to pray for something or someone only to have your prayer go unanswered? Have you ever felt frustrated that those who don't seem to love God end up in positions where they can make your life miserable? In today's podcast and post, we return to our ongoing series entitled Psalm's Greatest Hits, continuing with the 119th Psalm. We'll explore a remarkable change of heart in the psalmist and how it can help us when we feel the deck is stacked against us. Join me now as we discover that every prayer is optimally answered, and when things don't go our way, it either makes or breaks our faith. Hello, everybody. Yes. Thank you so much for coming back, for tuning in to another podcast, Beyond Everything Radio. I'm your host. My name is Kevin Winder, and I'm really glad you're here. Welcome to the program, folks. I always say it, but I'm always glad when you're here. It's because I put so much prayer and thought and consideration into this, and I pray for you, whether you realize it or not, for my audience who has been here, who is joining, who's new, those who are going to be brand new as of today. I just know that somehow you are being introduced to this, led here. You're here now for a reason. I know that to be true. I believe that to be true. So I hope that you'll lean into this podcast. It is part of a series. This is the ongoing series called Psalm's Greatest Hits. And about every 10 weeks, we pull back and we just kind of take a deep breath and we reflect. We kind of go deeper inward as the Psalms invite us to do that, to meditate. And we have been focusing on the 119th Psalm, which will probably at this pace take us another year and a half or so. I love it. I love that we can spend 3 years or 4 years in one psalm. And we're not doing it every week, obviously, so it takes some time. But this is my favorite psalm of all 152 of them or whatever it is. It just means so much to me. And I've been sharing with you as we've done this that each section has 8 verses. Each 8-verse section corresponds to a letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And today we are at the Kaf, which is the 11th letter in the Hebrew alphabet. So let's get started. This is podcast number 545. It's our 119th Psalm called Kaf. And the 11th letter in the Hebrew alphabet, I have a picture of it in my blog and also on my website. And folks, if you go to the website, I know a lot of you only listen on the podcast, and I want to say thank you for doing that. But I really want you to go to my website and consider signing up for the Old Stone Chapel. It is a immersive, contemplative training experience and practice. I don't know how else to say it. I aggregate things from very diverse fields and put them together thematically to train us in how to see spiritually and live contemplatively. And it's something that churches just generally don't teach. And it's unlike something that you may experience. So I want to invite you to explore it. Go to kevinwinder.com. Remember, I spell my name like the number 7. Sign up for the Old Stone Chapel. Yes, and then you can look at series that have been going on and look at the Psalm 119, and you can get caught up if you're so inclined. So I do have a picture of it there on the website as well as in the blog post. And it's just basically it looks like the lowercase b without the straight up vertical stanchion. So it's just kind of a little bloop, half circle maybe, for those who are just listening. And it's a pictogram, really. That's what Hebrew letters are. They're pictograms of this open space, symbolizing the open palm or the open hand or an open container, along with that container or hand's ability to receive or to give or even to cover things over. It can also mean to bend or to subdue. Okay, so that's what the imagery is about. And it becomes really vivid as the psalmist pours out his heart in prayer to God during this section of Psalm 119. The psalmist is asking questions as a hollow cup, a empty bowl, perhaps even as a beggar who has his empty palms upward, awaiting the Lord to fill him, to answer him. He's praying to be satisfied. Like, let's just pause right there and just reflect on yourself. Like, when have you asked God for something that really was important to you? The healing of a loved one. The change of a life circumstance where you knew someone who was in pain or suffering and you just wanted to see God do something for them or for yourself. You are at the bottom of your checkbook and you don't know where the money is going to come from, and you're praying. You are asking. Maybe you're desperate, right? Maybe you made a mistake and you want forgiveness. Maybe you're body needs healing. Maybe some part of your life needs healing, right? We always go to God at some point in our life, usually with desperation. And so listen to the words of the psalmist in verse 81 and 82. He says, "My soul longs for your salvation. I hope in your word. My eyes long for your promise. I ask, when will you comfort me?" Can you kind of see that? Like, flickering through this is the prayer of a person desperate. He's saying, I already have affection for your word, your promise, and for salvation. Like, I'm on your team. I'm one of the believers. So when will you comfort me? Like, that has to be a universal experience. You know, when you have this experience, you are having an experience with God. Every soul who has ever prayed a sincere prayer where he or she has asked God for help knows exactly how this psalmist feels. There's this frustrating tension where it just arises in us as we know that all the things are completely within the power of God to change, fix, or heal. And yet we return to God with an empty hands, so to speak, so often just asking to be filled. An empty palm seems unfair. In many cases, it's perceived as unloving. Do you realize that most atheists are birthed out of this tension? When they pridefully conclude that since they asked God and didn't receive their request, God must not exist. Or if he does, then he doesn't care, or he's cruel. And I remember a long time watching Bill Maher's movie entitled Religious. And he tells a story about he had a loved one, I think it was a grandma. And he was young, he was a boy, and he was raised half Catholic, half Jewish, and he was praying, God, would you heal? I think it was grandma, and she didn't get healed. And in his mind, that was enough to rule out the existence of God. And of course, growing up in the last 20, 30 years, you'd be, pressed in by what people say science has disproven. Religion, faith, and God. I don't think that's true. I think the opposite is very true. But it doesn't change the fact that most people who have very big doubts or who have tossed in their towel on their faith do so because they needed help from God and they didn't get it. And I mean, let's face it, if you're going to pray and God has the power, we're told he's all powerful. We're told he's all loving. This becomes the fodder of the problem of evil. If God is all powerful and all loving, why is there evil suffering in the world? Is it that he doesn't care, or is it he is powerless to do anything? Right? That's the conclusion that people come to. So we can't just gloss over this. The psalmist is asking the same question. When are you going to comfort me? When will you help me? Many of the skeptics who pray are like, well, if you answer the prayer, I'm going to really believe. And doesn't it make sense that if he prayed and it healed grandma, maybe Bill Maher wouldn't be an atheist today? Right? This is something we have to really reflect on. Have you ever prayed, please God, just this once? Or please God, have you ever hit desperation? Have you ever begged God with your hands cupped open? If you have, that's cough. A genuine and secure faith is never grown in a single moment of desperation. Just as a child isn't born at the moment of conception. Like if we want the baby, if we want the answer to prayer, if we desire God to fill our bowl, to subdue or to bend our will in conformity to his, that has to be the basis of the prayer. Bend or subdue, that's kaf. Then such a prayer is grown into us moment by moment as life brings opportunities for us to surrender the outcomes and trust God more than our sight or our strength or our cleverness. This surrendering of outcomes, it desiccates our ambitions, just dries it out. It ruins our pride as we learn God's love and his rules for living. Listen to this next two verses from this chapter, verses 83 and 84. For I have become like a wineskin in the smoke, yet I have not forsaken your statutes. How long must your servant endure? When will you judge those who persecute me? Right? He's saying, I'm shriveling up. I'm not juicy, so to speak. I'm not full of life. I'm drying out. But I haven't given up on your rules and your statutes and your ways. I'm still trying to live your life, God. Right? But isn't that what low-level religion teaches? Is it's transaction. You do the ritual and then God does for you. And since God isn't a cosmic vending machine and the secret isn't real, there's no law of attraction, folks. There's not a ritual here. Human advancement isn't going to do it. It's not a strategy. It's not a word of faith doctrine like you might have heard in some really jacked up theology or some pseudo spirituality that tries to help you cajole God to come out of the, you know, lamp. There isn't a ritual, a rite, a priest, a guru, an imam who can rub the genie in just the right way to get it to come out and do for you. And since the absolute and total sovereignty of God necessarily includes all of those over whom we seek our own advantage, then the big discovery within these prayers, within our soul, is the recognition that those who harm us are not completely other than us. God is withholding judgment on them just as he has withheld it on us. We never see this at first because we feel superior, more righteous than others. And if you are over-identified with your religion, you're going to still feel that way. You're on the right team. Everybody else is on the wrong team. God favors you. But then you have to be honest when your prayer, when the atheist gets the promotion and you didn't. You see, in these next sections, the psalmist takes us into this inner transformation that I spoke about in the introduction. His prayer is lifted from focusing upon how his enemies strive against him into this realization of something far greater, while simultaneously asking for God's help and deliverance from his enemies, he recognizes that God's commandments and rules for living elevate him out of mere flight or retaliation and into a patient endurance, regardless of the outcome. Did you hear me? Regardless of the outcome. When your prayer matures, it ceases to be about the outcome. Verse 85, the insolent have dug pitfalls for me. They do not live according to your law. All your commandments are sure. They persecute me with falsehood. Help me. See, what appears to be an empty hand at the beginning of this passage is revealed to be an overflowing container by the end of the passage. The atheist remains incapable of seeing all that subdues and satisfies this vacancy, the void, the empty palms, because the only answered prayer in the atheist's or unbeliever's estimation is the one that satisfies their will, their prideful will. And this opens up a radically larger cosmology to us, namely that the entirety of reality is not limited to solely the physical world. Concordantly, there exists non-physical reality along with physical reality, empirical, measurable things with non-empirical, non-measurable reality. That's where faith and logic and mathematics and wisdom all exist, which are all very real, but they're not things. They're not objects to be measured. They're subjects. And so there's subjective reality and objective reality. But the low-level prayer is only focused on the objective reality. Change the circumstance. Change this outcome. It's looking to God's hand, whereas subjective reality looks to God's face. And because of this cosmological shift from being independent, disconnected objects into an integrated subject, by faith, the psalmist now sees all that is filling his begging hands. Before his conclusion, based on the physical cosmos, his hands were still empty. But now the psalmist realizes his hands are not empty. He may not have got what he wanted, but he got something profound placed in his life. He possesses the satisfaction, which only comes from the spiritual depth dimension of true love. You see, now he possesses steadfast love, which is the immeasurable, overflowing perspective that just missed him at the beginning. So in this small view, his prayer wasn't answered, but in the cosmic view, it has been granted beyond overflowing. Verses 87 and 88. They've almost made an end of me on earth, but I have not forsaken your precepts. In your steadfast love, give me life, that I may keep the testimonies of your mouth. You see, because of this fully satisfying filling of his palms with the immense oceanic love of God, the psalmist's so-called enemies actually have been overcome from within himself. No, the enemies weren't removed. No, they may not have become nice. But within him, he views them differently. And that preserves them in their journey of discovering this love for themselves. By not altering all of the things and just crushing the enemy outright, God's grace, which was extended to the psalmist, is also being extended to those for whom he's fearing. The enemy is transformed into a friend he doesn't know well yet, who hasn't perceived the love of the psalmist that the psalmist has. Does that make sense? Do you see that bubbling through here? Compassion replaces vengeance because there's been a change on the inside, not because anything measurable has actually changed. Restoration on the heart level has replaced retribution, revenge. And this portal allows us to see the path to redeeming every particle of our universe, folks. Had God simply snuffed out the psalmist's enemies and graced him with all his myopic surface-level wishes, the psalmist, like ourselves, would never actually experience the love of God as anything but our own personal assistant. We would have subjugated God to ourselves, and folks, God's simply not going to allow that. Most prayers are really our attempt to subject God to our will, aren't they? Not subject our wills to God. And that's the real lesson here. When you're praying and you're desperate and you want something, is your prayer for the thing? Or is your prayer for God? That's the tell. And if it's for the thing, and then God is just your genie in a bottle, he's only become your means to your end and not the end in itself. Now, by looking at our own empty hands, we can be graced just like the psalmist with an answer to prayer that's also satisfying. To not get what you want can be transformative. It can grow our faith to the point where we may never pray for our own will again. And isn't that the prayer? Not my will, but thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Instead, we lift our needy hands knowing that they will always be filled to overflowing in a way that makes life far better for everybody, not just our own small agenda. So folks, we can surrender all outcomes because we know God is good. God bless you as you contemplate these things.